broadcasting live at 10 a.m. Central, worldwide on the web. This is OneRadioNetwork.com.
And a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone, and you've got OneRadioNetwork.com. OneRadioNetwork.com, it's April 15th, 2010, and yes, they sometimes call that tax day. Yep. Tomorrow we have Open Phone Friday. Good morning to you. Kind of a rainy day here in Central Texas. I hope you're warm and comfy wherever you are around the world. And OneRadioNetwork.com, we broadcast every morning live here. It's good to be with you. I have a special show for you this morning. Since it is tax day, people think about things like taxes, the government, Internal Revenue Service, the courts, freedom. Who am I? Am I a citizen? What's going on? And we have a gentleman that I had the pleasure of listening to for a talk that he gave through another venue for about 4 or 5 hours. And his name is Bill Thornton. He's in California, and he's a longtime student of the Constitution, of common law, of freedom issues. He worked with the Ohio Supreme Court Technology Committee. They were looking into some different ways people might be able to file electronically, and he was on that committee. They asked him. He's a system designer by trade, and he looked at the law, the system of law, as a system designer from top down, beginning in the early 80s, so he's been at it for a very long time. And we're going to talk about all kinds of things this morning on Tax Day 2010. Not to California, Mr. Bill Thornton. How are you, sir? Good morning.
Well, we're doing just fine.
Well, nice to have you here. Thanks for getting up early. Do you generally get up early?
Oh, no. I feel it's uncivilized to get up before...
Before when?
Before noon.
My goodness. Well, you're very uncivilized this morning, Bill Thornton.
Yes.
You're very civilized.
I feel the hairs growing out of my chest.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you feel strong. Let's invite the listeners in if you care to participate. There are two ways to do it. 888-663-6386. That is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Bill Thornton, do you and I, as men and listeners, as women just walking around on the earth, do we have rights just by being, you know, this person walking on the earth, or do we get those rights because we have this thing called the Constitution?
Natural rights is what we have when we're born, and the Constitution is one of the things that we outrank. And however, if you don't want to be one of the people, you could always be a citizen, in which case the Constitution outranks you. So there's a pecking order there. The people own the Constitution or own the government, and the government owns the citizens.
The people own the Constitution, mm-hmm. and the government owns the citizens who use the Constitution, Bill?
Well, Well, it's the other way around. The citizens get used by the Constitution.
Oh, wait a minute. That's not what they taught us in school.
Well, you're not supposed to know that. Actually, if you look at the preamble of the Constitution says, "We the people of the United States, in order to accomplish this laundry list of tasks, do hereby ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America."
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I can't tell you what the people are, but I can tell you where they're from, okay? We're from the United States. It says, "We the people of the United States." And we are we the people ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America, which is 4 words. So we're from the United States, which is 2 words. And we ordained and created this Constitution for them. Okay, the Constitution was not created for you, and it wasn't created for me. It was created for the United States of America.
And what is the United States of America? Is it an organization, a corporation, an entity? What is it exactly?
Well, it's a corporation, The states are the countries.
Okay.
But it is a corporation, and you can always tell a corporation. It's real easy. All corporations have presidents.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah. CEOs.
Countries have governors.
Hmm.
So, the word ordain means to authorize or to make law, and the word create means that we put it on paper. So, we ordained and created this Constitution for them, for the United States of America.
So that's
where you see the relationship between the people and the country. And in fact, that relationship is one of sovereign and slave. So you've heard of public servants.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why they're public servants, because we, the public, the people, have created this for them to follow. They take their jobs and they work for us.
So we
now that's a difficult thing for a bureaucrat to understand.
Right. We create the Constitution for the public servants who work for the United States of America Corporation to serve us, and the Constitution is our deal, Bill, with the public servants, or our agreement?
Well, it's their commitment to us.
Their commitment to us as the corporation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Does that mean that we give them any power over us by having this relationship?
Not at all. That was where I was headed with this, that we the people ordain and establish. There is nothing there in those words that says that we gave up anything. There's nothing in the Constitution that says we gave up anything.
Ordain and establish.
We are sovereigns. We are in our sovereign capacity.
Mm-hmm. What does sovereign mean?
Sovereign means that we're not accountable to higher authority.
Wow, that's pretty heavy.
That is. Well, there are some people who say, well, God is my sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a religious issue. This is a secular issue, meaning earthly. And relative to the government, we are sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
So we outrank them, and we're like individual kings, and we are kings without subjects.
I like that. And the states are sovereign.
In their own realm, yes. But we are sovereigns relative to states as well.
Oh, so we're sovereign. So Patrick lives, is domiciled in Texas. So I'm sovereign here, even. And so the governor doesn't have any rule over me.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. Now, you can have contracts with them where you have an exchange. For example, I think the most common contract is a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if you get a driver's license, that's a commercial contract. We authorize the government to regulate commerce. So if you're going to engage in commerce, that regulation appears in the form of a license. And there are rules that you commit to. And if you break those rules, well, then you have to do whatever the contract says. And if you look at the vehicle code, for example, that's your contract manual. The vehicle code is not law. What it is its code. You ever wondered why it's called the vehicle code, or you have the penal code and you have the business and professions code and stuff like that? Or maybe you have what in many states they call revised statutes.
Mm-hmm.
Why are statutes called statutes and why are codes called codes? Well, the main thing is that they're not law. That's why they have their own name.
If they're not law, what are they?
They're codes.
And what does a code mean?
Well, it's a rule that you have to follow.
Oh, okay. But it's not law.
It's not law, no. Law.
Well, wait a minute. Somebody says, Patrick, you broke code 40506 where you can't discharge a firearm in the city. They could give you a ticket for that, so isn't that a law?
Well, not if you're one of the people. Now, this is where you need to follow through on the next thought here.
Mm-hmm.
Contract with them, sure. But if you don't have a contract with them, then they can't enforce code against you if you're one of the people, if you choose not to. Now, there is an exception to that, okay, because if you offend the other people, the other sovereigns, then they could come against you. You don't need the government. And that the method for coming against you is called a grand jury. So if a grand jury either indicts you or makes a presentment against you, that's the other sovereign speaking. And so we have a clipped sovereignty. It's a limited sovereignty. What's the limitation is that so long as you can get at least one person on a jury deciding in your favor, then there's no conviction. But if you have 100% of the jury against you, all 12, then you lose your sovereignty and you now become subject to the other people.
So we're sovereign, but it means, though, that's the responsibility of not encroaching on other person's or their property.
You can do anything you want, so is how the story goes, so long as you do not encroach upon another sovereign's territory.
Mm-hmm. That means their face or their property or whatever.
Right. So even though the codes do not apply to you, better be careful, because the penalties for violating other sovereigns are much more severe.
Ah, taking somebody's stuff.
If you look back at the common law, when the common law was being freely exercised and we were not dedicated to codes, the first time burglar got executed. Okay?
Yeah.
In other words, if anybody got burgled, I have no doubt they felt like killing them. Right? You know, you come home and you find your house empty, and when the burglar got caught, that's exactly what happened. He got executed. So the common law is very much can be an expression of one's emotions, and if you can convince a jury of 12 to execute that guy, he will be executed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back a little bit. So let's see. We're sovereign but if we contract with somebody, let's go back even further. I want to ask you about what is the significance of the Declaration of Independence and its difference with the Constitution. It seems like a sacred document, July 4th, 1776, when we broke away from King George, we said, okay, we declare that we're free people. Is there something more important to that document, Bill Thornton, rather than just having a kind of a nice thing to talk about?
Well, Abraham Lincoln said that there were three constitutions. And we had the Constitution that we're familiar with, and he considered the Declaration of Independence as a second constitution, and I forget what the third one was. But you see, under the common law, there's only one law, and that is don't step on another sovereign's toes. You know, don't injure another sovereign. Don't encroach on his territory.
Mm-hmm.
He has a limitation for you, and if there's some disagreement as just exactly where the dividing line was or is between the two sovereigns, well, we can always give it to a jury who will decide for us. So the founding fathers had a tremendous confidence in the juries, more confidence than they had in the judges, and they looked to the general public as being the great stabilizer in our system. And so if you could convince a jury of 12 that something should be a certain way and convince them of the penalty for not doing things that way, then you could get convicted for it. It'd be for anything, okay? So some people like to call it mob rule, but the fact of the matter is, I don't know if you've ever served on a jury, but I've served on three of them, and I can tell you that every single person in every jury I've been on took the job seriously. Now, some were smart, some were dumb, but there was no question about the integrity. The people who went on there wanted to get the right decision, and that gave me a lot of confidence in juries. If a jury makes an error, it's a random error. If a judge makes an error, it's probably designed into the system.
Well, how did we get to the point that most Americans walk around and feel like the government has control over their lives?
Well, the story starts back at the around the American Revolution. There was an admiral who wrote back to the king and said that he was having trouble implementing the king's laws because everybody in America was a lawyer. And they sold more law books out of the English bookstores to Americans than they sold in England. So we were a highly educated people. I don't know if you realize it, but in 1776, Harvard University was over 100 years old.
Really?
And it was private. And we had a private school system, and the parents got together and hired a teacher, and they wanted to be sure their kids learn, so these teachers had to perform. Well, along about 1850, the first mandatory public school was established. There were some public schools, but there weren't many. But at that time, the first mandatory public school was established. And I believe it was populated under military supervision in the Chicago area. I hope my facts are right on that.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, the parents objected, and the military said, no, those kids are going to school. Well, that was the beginning of the problem. And over the next 100 years, from about the 1850s to the 1950s, the whole school system, basically they phased out the subject of civics and replaced it with a new subject called American Government and Social Studies. So civics, is actually the legal meaning of civics, is that it's the study of personal rights.
Hmm.
Well, that's bothersome to the government, so they quit teaching it in the schools, and the government set the curriculum, and they don't study the Constitution, they don't study the Magna Carta, they don't study what your rights are. The one thing you don't learn is the rules that you should know for living in your own society. So by the 1950s, nobody knew anything about civics, meaning personal rights, and they knew a lot about, they didn't, but they learned a little bit about how the government operates. Well, that's a whole different subject area.
Sure.
So now, along with that, they dumbed down the educational system, and every 10 years, the graduating seniors' knowledge level drops by one grade level. So the graduating senior today has about the same level of knowledge that a fifth grader did 70 years ago. So by the standards of education 70 years ago, we now have a nation of fifth graders coming out of the schools. Now, how can you run a nation well on that basis if the public doesn't know? And so that's the powers that be have, on the long term, they've got the winning combination.
Hmm.
You do not have a responsible public anymore because of—
Yeah, I was thinking about it this morning, Bill, just the whole idea, the basic paradigm that we have to ask someone or claim someone or say something about our right to just go about and do—
Well,
just anything. It seems a little strange. The whole concept just doesn't seem to fit. But
easy to explain.
Okay,
it's simple. Basically, the initial position was that we the people created and ordained and established the Constitution for the government. And of course, as I said earlier, bureaucrats have trouble with that concept.
Yeah,
and so. They, right around 1868, they created an amendment to the Constitution called the 14th Amendment.
1868?
Uh-huh. And in 1868, this amendment came into being, and what it said was that if you are born or naturalized and in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, then you are, by definition, constitutional definition, a citizen of the United States and a citizen of the state that you're in. So in the schools, going back to the schools, they teach you everything about being a citizen and nothing about being a people. And so the citizens are subject. Well, when you're subject, that means somebody's making decisions for you, whereas the people are not subject.
So ever since 1868, they came up with the idea of a 14th Amendment citizen. Was it originally back then kind of sold as the idea this was for people with black skin?
Well, the original idea was to, because you see the blacks that were brought in, they were citizens of their country, and as slaves, they had no citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And their children had no citizenship, and it was many states would not recognize them as citizens. So they brought in this 14th Amendment to force the states to recognize the citizenship of the newly freed slaves. But when you really look at it, what they actually did was they pulled the slaves out of private ownership and put them into the condition of public ownership, because now they are subject to the jurisdiction.
Owned by the corporation of the United States of America.
Exactly, and by the states, because according to the 14th Amendment, if you're a citizen of the United States, you're also a citizen of the state where you're residing.
Mm-hmm.
And citizenship means that you are underneath whatever government you're living in. So
underneath it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you are subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. So when you're subject, that means you got to do what you're told to do. And so as a citizen, you have no rights. If you say you're a citizen of the United States, right there, that statement blows away all your rights. You have no rights. What you have is privileges granted to you. Now, the privileges can be pretty good, but they are privileges. They're not rights. However, they don't want you to be that awake and that aware.
Mm-hmm.
So they give these privileges a special name. They're called civil rights.
Oh.
They're actually civil privileges. In other words, they are privileges granted by the civil government.
But privileges can be taken away.
That's exactly right.
So
there's a lot of battles over what your so-called rights are. But see, the word rights is being misused when they actually mean privileges.
So Bill Thornton, ever since 1868, be it no matter what color of the skin of the person, they if they were born in this country, they were slated or deemed to be whatever the term is, United States citizens.
Well, we outlawed slavery.
Hmm.
This was a legal mechanism for forcing the states to accept the black slaves as citizens.
Okay.
There was nothing about color in the 14th Amendment. However, you see, the 14th Amendment was written in such a way that we could also convince the white people to give up their sovereignty and become slaves too.
Well, why would they do that? I mean, these people you say that long ago, Bill Thornton, they were much more educated than we are now. Wouldn't they know that they're giving up their rights for privileges by buying into this?
Well, they didn't buy into it.
Oh.
That's why around 1850, before that 14th Amendment got passed, they had to take over the school system.
Oh, the corporation did.
Well, sure.
Mm.
And so as they dumbed down the system, they then brought in more and more control. As you know, Jefferson said, and this is Jefferson made a statement. He said, and this is an exact quote, he said, "If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be."
Mm-hmm.
He said that in 1816. And you see, ignorance and liberty are mutually exclusive. You can't have both.
Doesn't happen.
And so the powers that be took control of the school system, dumbed it down little by little over a century, longer than a century now. And so look what you got.
Hmm. So back then in the late 1800s, do we have any way of knowing if there were generous amounts of people or some people that said, "I'm not going to be one of these United States citizens. I'm a sovereign," and just didn't buy into it and take any of the privileges?
Well, that wasn't the issue back then.
Oh, it wasn't.
Well, people understood, and the government understood. You see, the government had a job to do, and it functioned. We had grand juries that were real grand juries, not legislated grand juries. We had petite juries that were real petite juries, not when you know. When I was younger, in my 20s, I met a person that he was a real old guy, and he told me about when he was a young man, he was on a jury. And he told me the story about this black guy that was about 50 years old in Mississippi, and he was in Mississippi on a jury here. And the black guy had didn't have any work to do. He couldn't find a job. And what he did is he went out and he stole some chickens, and the cops figured out it must have been him, and they went into his house and took the chickens off the dinner table, and he didn't even have a chance to eat them, and prosecuted him for stealing the chicken. And the jury he was on this jury, and he and another guy, the two of them, understood the system and educated the other jurors. And basically, they looked at this, and we're talking about a fully empowered jury now, because these guys knew their job as jurors. And they looked at this, and they decided that this man had a choice between starving or stealing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they decided that we had an issue of property rights versus individual rights.
Yeah.
And they decided that property rights were not so important that we would make a man starve to death. So they found him not guilty. And this was in spite of the facts, in spite of the so-called codes or statutes against stealing, they found him not guilty. And that's what a jury can do. They can ignore the law. The so-called law, actually codes, they can make a real decision based on what they really think was right.
So that would be an empowered jury under common law, the way the thing was set up.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
So, remember, we're going back quite a few years.
Sure.
We're going back to the early 1900s, where there were still some people who were reasonably educated. And he said that the judge was very angry at that decision, and as was the prosecutor and, of course, the so-called victim. And so he ordered the jury to go back and reconsider their decision, which they did. They went back, they debated, they thought about it, and they came back and they said, yep, he's not guilty. So, and then after that was final, then what the jury did is they issued a court order to the judge, ordering the judge to make an official finding that this man was eligible for state assistance, and ordering the state to cut him a check or to give him some money. And that was real justice in action.
Very interesting. We're with Bill Thornton. If you care to join us, 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. He's been a student of the common law, the Constitution, and freedom issues in the courts for a very, very long time, over 25 years. So let's go back. So then most of us then, I guess, except those that understand this, are 14th Amendment or United States citizens.
And well, we're taught that way, yes.
Go ahead. No, did I say something incorrect there?
We are taught that way in school.
Oh, we are taught that way. But then, okay, so are we, just because we don't know any better, like, are we one of those 14th Amendment citizens?
Well, you know, when we go to school, we spend an awful lot of time in school learning English, learning math, learning various subjects. And one of the subjects we should be learning is civics.
Mm-hmm.
Our rights are. And we don't spend any time on that. But that's actually what we should be doing. So we should have that knowledge. But they have dumbed us down. They've given us so little education that we don't really know what our rights are.
So is the United States of America, the corporation, taking advantage of citizens on two levels, where they just tell them what to do and they make them do stuff and the people believe it? And then they also have political and legal cover if anybody really tries to give them a hard time in that venue, because they are, in fact, 14th Amendment citizens, and they've given up their rights, even albeit unknowingly.
That's right. That's right. You have no rights if you are a citizen. None whatsoever. Not if you're using the word rights as correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Right is something that cannot be overridden. To distinguish them, we call them natural rights. There are civil rights, which are actually privileges granted by a higher authority.
Mm-hmm.
So the people own the government, and the government owns the citizens. That's the best way to look at it.
If we take stuff like Social Security, or use Federal Reserve notes, which are debt instruments, not real money, and those kinds of things, is that cementing the fact that we are citizens, and people can say, "Well, you know, you're using this funny money, and you're taking Social Security and Medicare and all of this stuff. You're on the dole, so you are a citizen, and you are a subject."
Well, there's a lot of theories running around on the internet about that, and I suppose that there's some truth to them, but I don't think that's really important.
You don't? Why not?
Well, because I'm one of the people.
Hmm.
My sovereign capacity, and where's the contract? Just because I spend some Federal Reserve notes to buy a product, that say that I'm subject to whatever. And if they do try to say I'm subject to them because I use Federal Reserve notes, well, if you knew that all the time and you didn't bother to tell me, then and yet you knew I didn't know, and yet you did not inform me, well, then that's fraud.
That's fraud. And then that kind of squirrels the whole deal if it's fraud.
Absolutely.
There is no deal.
So if I were to go to court, why, I would put them on the carpet for that. I'd say, okay, show me the contract. That's all, you know.
Yeah, but then you have to go into court, and so let's go. That, as a United States citizen, can you go into court, either as a plaintiff or a defendant, and get a empowered jury and argue your case, and without having...
No.
A judge just do what he wants?
No, you're mixing things here.
Okay, all right.
I mean,
Correct me then.
Well, you see, you're trying to say, well, gee, if I'm a citizen, could I go into court and get my rights? No, not at all. Not if you're a citizen.
Well, that was the whole point of the question. So if you're a citizen, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You're not going to. You don't have any rights.
Court, and the judge will be in charge of you because he represents the government, and you're an incompetent. Under the parens patria principle, which means the government is responsible for, you know, the king is responsible for the idiots and for the extremely poor, the incompetent. And so if you're not that, well, then the government steps in and runs your affairs for you. You become a ward of the court.
And that's what happens when we go to court as a U.S. citizen?
That's what happens when you have an attorney represent you in the court.
Well, that's ugly. No wonder people don't like going to court.
Sure. I mean, you have a judge there who's controlling everything, controlling your life, sure. But far better to go into court as one of the people and owning the court. You know, if I own the government, I own the court.
And that's what you talk about on your website, 1215.org, a lot about common law. And if one had to go in the court, how to establish a whole common law court, and that could be a whole show in itself. So, but...
Well, see, we're kind of jumping in the middle here. In order to really appreciate these concepts, you need a core knowledge of various things. There are several factors that come together in order to enable you to do this.
And okay, let's go there.
For
then.
Your listeners really ought to go to 1215.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if they would do that, then they will see the foundation, the knowledge that's necessary in order to assert your sovereignty. You cannot just say, hey, I'm sovereign, you can't touch me. because they're going to say, oh, yeah, prove it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So knowledge is, that's the price you have to pay to become one of the sovereigns. You have a right to be a sovereign anytime you choose, but you have to back it up with knowledge. And if you're unwilling to spend the time to do your homework and study these things, well, then you're not going to be sovereign. You are going to be taken over because you are, in fact, incompetent, legally speaking.
As a United States citizen, we're incompetent.
Well, yeah, if you don't know your rights, you're not competent to...
Oh, I see. So you go in the court as a citizen, and the judge assumes that you don't know your rights, so he's got to kind of take care of you for you.
It's pretty easy to tell when you don't know your rights.
they know.
Well, I'll tell you what the first signal is.
Mm-hmm.
You go into court, is the judge making any decisions? Anything. If he's making any decisions at all, you know you're not in a sovereign court. You're just a citizen. So they make decisions for you. They say do this, do that, do the other, whatever.
So you're saying because in a common law court, a court of the people, you go in there and you just say what you say, they say what they say, and then the evidence speaks for themselves, and a jury says, well, you win.
Look, the judge really only has one job, and his job is to rent the property to you for an hour.
Oh, great.
And so he's on that bench, he rents it, and once he rents that property, he has nothing to say. At best, his job is to follow the orders of the court. See, a judge and a court are two different things. And his job is to follow the orders of the court. And so when I go to court, I'm in charge, it's my court, and the judge is there to help me.
Here's an email from Bruce, said, thanks for the show. Exactly which section of the website should I concentrate on to find the information relating to the separation of the tribunal from the magistrate in the court of record?
Well, when you go to the home page at 1215.org, you click on Law Notes. And when you click on Law Notes, that second page that pops up, there's a set of instructions that tell you exactly what you should do to learn the basic core theory. And if you follow that, once you acquire that body of knowledge in your brain, then you will be ready to go to the rest of the website, which explains more things. But you have to have the fundamental understanding, and that's where you get it.
Here's an email from Paul, wants to know, is there a way to legally denounce your U.S. citizenship?
You don't have to legally denounce it. You see, one of the wonderful things about being the owner of the country, that's what you are when you're one of the people, is that you can decide to be a citizen for some purposes and not a citizen for other purposes.
Well, I like that.
Yeah, there are certain, you know, Liz, one of the things that you need to understand is that, at least about me, is that I love government. I think government is wonderful. The only thing I don't like is the bureaucrats who abuse their authority. That's what I'm against. But the government itself is great. And the more, you know, I used to be at one time I was a government hater. And I hated the legal system and everything about it. But the more I studied it, the more I realized what a wonderful system it was. It really is. But it's not wonderful for the citizens. It's wonderful for the people. Okay? Got to understand what the difference is between a people and a citizen.
Well, we're beginning to get
the word people. Yeah, the word people is both plural and it's also singular. It's correct to say that I am a people.
I'm a people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We're not used to saying that. We think of people as being plural of person, but the plural of person is persons with an S. And the people, the word people can be either singular or plural. So there right there is an educational misinformation.
So I'm a people, or what about, am I one of the people? What's the difference?
Well, if you say I'm one of the people, then you're talking about the people as a group in the plural sense. But if you say I am a people, then that's in the singular sense.
Mm-hmm. And a people is different from a citizen.
Absolutely. The people are as defined by the preamble of the Constitution, and the citizens are as defined by the 14th Amendment.
Well, why is it then if Patrick will get a traffic ticket, goes into court and says, Judge, I'm Patrick. I'm a people, and I'm a sovereign. So you can't do anything to me. He'll just, contempt and fine me $200 and throw away the key.
Well, yeah, because you're not backing it up. See, when you go to court, you really shouldn't do much talking at all. Everything should be on paper. And these people don't like to go on paper, okay, because now it's documented. If you go in talking, it's words to the wind. They blow away, and you have even if you have a stenotypist there, recording everything, or even if you had a tape recorder, that doesn't count. What counts is what you put on paper. And so, if you're going to go into court and assert your sovereignty, you best do it on paper. And by the way, you cannot be a defendant. You have to be a plaintiff. You have to be the one doing the suing. So. When you get sued, or in other words, when you get a traffic ticket, that's a suit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do is you have to counterclaim them. You have to come back with, well, wait a minute. I'm one of the people. By what authority do you presume to take over the people? Okay? And so then, but understand also that if you have a driver's license, that is a contract.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. Well, I got one of these contract, these driver's license, so that counterclaim deal doesn't work.
Well, not if you've agreed to be subject to their system.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing that you can contract to go to jail, sure.
Well, how do you live here without having all these little contracts?
Well, you turn them down.
Mm. Driver's license, you turn them down?
You could.
Mm. But then they'd be stopping every time you turn around, you know?
Look, I'm not here to advocate suicide, okay?
Right.
I realize that the cop on the street is also ignorant. He came through the same school system we did. And so he thinks he's been taught, he's been trained that he's the king of the road. And so you're not going to win any battles on the street. So what you have to do is you have to pull him into court and you counterclaim him. You don't have a contract. And frankly, the process that I suggest to people that they do is that they contact the state, typically the Department of Motor Vehicles, and write a letter to them and ask them or tell them that you intend to travel without a driver's license and what they thought about it. And they'll come back with a letter saying essentially that if you do that and we catch you, we're going to beat you up, okay, or put you in jail or give you a ticket or whatever. And so now you have a difference of opinion. So when you have a difference of opinion, now it's ripe to go to court. So you sue them. And what you sue them is for what's called a declaratory judgment. In other words, a judgment which declares the positions of the parties. And when you get a judgment out of the court saying that you are not subject to the authority of the state, and you get a court order telling the state to update its driver's motor vehicle records, and then when a cop stops you and he looks up your record and your record says he has no jurisdiction over you, he'll obey the boss. He'll say, well, goodbye, have a nice day.
Really?
That's the proper way to do it. And then it only then do you turn in your driver's license, okay? Don't go out there challenging the system because, frankly, they have the guns and you don't.
Yeah. This is Patrick Timpone along with Bill Thornton and 888-663-6386. Email patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Here's an email from Emily. She is in Chicago. She said, how can I use what Mr. Thornton is talking about to allow my child to go to school without being vaccinated?
Well, of course, remember this, that there's a war going on here, and it's basically the abusive bureaucrats, and really not the bureaucrats, it's their bosses, it's the way up high up in the command. That's where the problem is. And they've decided they're going to do a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you read the laws closely, actually not laws, they're codes, if you read the codes closely, you'll probably see that there is either a religious exemption or a health exemption or some other way where there can be an exemption. And so you try to exercise it. But look, they're hell-bent on reducing the population by 85%. So it's entirely possible that you will be officially murdered, you know, by the vaccinations. And that is one of the things wrong with the top management. But they couldn't do that if everybody were educated in what their rights are. You know, the American Revolution actually was accomplished by only 3% of the people. You see, in the American Revolution, one-third were pro-king, one-third were anti-king, and one-third were in the don't-care category. And out of the one-third that were anti-king, 10% of them were actually out there actively opposing the king. And so 10% of one-third is 3.3%. So it only takes about 3% of the population to change the government. Well, we don't have 3% of the population fighting the government. We have far, far less than that. But if everybody fought their traffic ticket, the court systems would be so loaded with activity, they couldn't handle the business. So they'd have to change the rules. And they'd either have to take your rights totally away from you, or they'd have to yield and back off. Well, if you have educated people as a population, then they would have to back off. Hmm.
Okay. This is April 15th, 2010, of course, Tax Day. We have talked to people over the years doing radio talk shows. I guess the more famous of them is early 70s. I talked to Irwin Schiff and actually spent a little time with Irwin, and I believe, if I'm correct, that he is in the slammer as we speak.
Exactly. Look, you know what some people do, and I'm not in this category, some people actually stand up and challenge the government, okay?
On income taxes.
And see if you can convict me. Well, they did, okay?
Yeah, they did.
If you have the entire system up and down the line against you, regardless of whether you're right or wrong, they will actually win the battle. You don't want it to be a contest of wills. What you want it to be is a question of law. And so when I go into court, I'm very mild. I say very little. I don't argue because, frankly, everything that I have to say is on paper. And so I just don't get into those contests with judges. The minute you get into a contest with a judge, he's going to show you, hey, you know, I'm boss. But when you're talking law you speak, as the Bible says, you speak with a soft voice, okay? You don't yell and scream. So you can set things up legally. And believe me, I know this is hard for some people to believe, but I found that the judges generally, as a general rule, are quite honest, quite conscientious, and they cooperate with me. And, of course, the reason they cooperate with me is because I have the real law on my side. And when I suspend a judge and prohibit him from making any decisions in the court, at the same time, I also protect him. So when his higher-ups might ask him why he did not enforce the policy, he can honestly say that he was fenced in by the law. And consequently, I protect the judge, in addition to stopping the judge.
And you protect him and stop him by establishing the court of record, or what you call common law court.
Exactly.
With your paperwork?
The court of record is the ultimate battleground. As far as law goes, if you can't make a court of record work, well, then the system is failing, and now you have the meat for the revolution. And this is what you don't want. Now, I personally have lived through two revolutions in foreign countries, and I can tell you it's not a pretty sight. And that's a tremendous understatement. There are so many injustices that occur in a revolution. It's the last thing that you want. I mean, if it's necessary, it's necessary. And if you want to know when you should have a revolution, just read the Declaration of Independence. It very well describes the conditions for revolution. But you don't want that. And so you want to be able to make the law work, and the court of record is a wonderful instrument, a legal instrument, for making justice work. because you see, the court of, in a court of record, the judge is prohibited from making a decision. That comes with it. And what's really interesting is the Supreme Court, what it said about a court of record. Okay, and here I'm going to read a quote to you. This is what the Supreme Court thinks of a court of record. It says, the judgment of a court of record, whose jurisdiction is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the fact by deciding it. In other words, in simple language, a decision by the court of record is not appealable and cannot be changed even by the Supreme Court.
Bill Thornton, yeah, very, it's very fascinating. Most of our listeners probably will not find themselves in court. So, and they are probably concerned with things like, how can I retain my right to eat or get nutritional, excuse me, nutritional supplements that, you know, they're talking about trying to constantly take away, or vaccines, or not having to get a health insurance that we don't want. These kinds of issues, and not having somebody knock on the door and tell you you got to do something, get a vaccine or a flu shot or something. Well, what that category of person, what are they going to have to do to get to the point where they're going to be comfortable with saying no?
Well, I think if it's as you describe it, then all I can tell them is you're going to have to eat, do, and learn to love the taste of it. Because
really?
You see, the problem is this, is that you are going to end up in court, all right? If you're going to insist that you have rights, you're going to end up in court. Simple reason that we have so many ignorant bureaucrats who think that they're in charge. They're not. See, they don't know what I'm telling you either. And so they think they're in charge, and guess what? They're going to come against you. And you're not going to win that battle at that point. You have to go to court because the judges know this stuff, okay? Once you lay it out to a judge and he realizes you know what you're talking about, that inverts the power. That puts the power in your hands and with the cooperation of the judge. Well, he has to cooperate if we have law.
I'm curious, though, that most judges they're elected. I mean, they're like political positions. Why would somebody, just because they went to law school, know what you know about common law? It doesn't make sense to me. Why would they know that?
Well, they don't know that.
Oh, they don't. Well, then how are you going to establish a court of records that the judge doesn't know any of this stuff?
Like, I have friends who are attorneys, and
they don't know this.
I have yet to meet. In I've been curious about the law for 30 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. I got serious about it about 25 years ago. But beyond that, I always had a latent interest in law, and I did a little bit of reading and study and interaction with traffic tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And in reflection, I have yet to ever meet an attorney who knows what a court is. He practices in it, he follows rules, but he has no clue what a court is. Okay? So these attorneys don't know, and if you get a judge pro tem that he's temporarily put in as a judge, he doesn't know what a court is either. He's an attorney. No attorney really knows. They don't teach it in school. But when a judge becomes a judge, he is granted an opportunity to go to judge's school. Now, they don't call it judge's school. They call it seminars.
Mm-hmm.
But he has an opportunity to learn more than what they teach in school. You see, somebody's got to keep the system straight. And so the only people who can keep the system straight is the judges. And so if a person becomes an appellate court judge or a Supreme Court justice, he knows what a court is, and he has to know. And so that's who I talk to. And the judges that are lower down, they're judges because they have the intellectual capacity, but not necessarily that last little bit of education. So when I present my paperwork is very much a mini course in law designed to teach the judges what the real law is.
But you have to get to the higher levels. How do you do that?
Well, no.
No, you don't?
This, This is on the lower level.
Okay.
And the judges are there because, as a general rule, they're pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
So when you present the law in an authoritative manner, in other words, you can show here's the case law, here's what the Supreme Court has said, here's what's in the statutes and codes, this is what they understand. And when you present to them what it is about your sovereignty in a rational way, they see it and they say, oh, okay, makes sense. You know, and then they go along with the real law.
If somebody has committed fraud against you in a contract, say in a mortgage or something like that, fraud is fraud. And if you could prove that, why would you necessarily have to have a court of record or a common law court to prevail? Isn't the judge fair enough to say, well, you know, it really was fraud here?
No, because the judges have to carry out policy.
Policy.
These are the hidden rules that they have to go by. A judge is not going to advance in his career if he's going to ignore policy.
And what do you mean policy, Bill?
Well, these are the non-legislated decisions. This is what we do because we want to do it.
I hate it when that happens.
This is you have this small cadre up there called the administration, right? The president, vice president,
mm-hmm.
and all of his bureaucrats. And you have this legislature. You know, there's only, 535 people,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the Congress.
Right.
Those people are doing what they want to do, or they're doing what their handlers want them to do. So the founding fathers gave us this alternative system, which is actually the real system of law that enables people to keep the government in check. You know, you've heard that this is a government of checks and balances. Well, the check is the people, and the balances are between the different departments and branches of government. But the check is the people, because we have within our hands the lawful power to suspend the government when the government is not doing the job that we want it to do. And so that's where the rubber meets the road. So to get back to the question about vaccination, ultimately, if that becomes an issue, that person's going to have to counterclaim the government if the government tries to enforce it and say, wait a minute, you know, I'm not under your system. I don't have a contract with you, and you have to back off.
And you're talking about through resources like yours on 1215.org, learning how to do it so you can do it yourself, because an attorney's not going to know how to do it.
Exactly. Attorneys don't understand this stuff.
Could you have an attorney and actually then be in a common law court, or is that an oxymoron?
No, you could have an attorney in the, you know, remember that.
Establish a court of record, I mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is right. You can have an attorney speak for you in the common law court, excepting that in a common law court, we don't do much speaking. We put everything in writing.
Well, that seems like a pretty safe way to do it.
It is. It is. That's why I love it.
Here's an email from Bruce, who wants to know, where can I find the Supreme Court quote regarding court of record that he just read?
Oh, it's on the website. You go, if you're on the home page,
okay.
Click on Law Notes, okay? And then you go on that second page, on the right-hand side, right about the middle of the box there, it says Superior Court versus Inferior Court. And you click on that, Superior Court versus Inferior Court, and then you scroll all the way to the bottom of the page, the last paragraph, and that's where the quote is.
Okay. Bill Thornton, we're going to take a quick break. Stay right there. My name is Patrick Timpone. It is Tax Day 2010. We thought we'd give you a little special presentation. I hope your head's not exploding about citizenship and courts and stuff. And this is real freedom as rubber meets the road, as Mr. Thornton just said. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. Thank you all for your kind donations. That is how we do it around here financially, is listeners support it, OneRadioNetwork.com. We now have a easy way for you to do like 10, 20, or 30 bucks a month. I mean, that's huge. 10 bucks a month would be 120 bucks a year. Holy cow. That would be a lot if we got a bunch of those. Our expenses are about over $4,000 a month. Not any salary for Patrick. That's just $4,000 to pay everything just to be sustainable with nothing extra for me. I'm fine. I don't need any money to do this, but we just want to pay the bills. So if you support us with your $5 or $10 or $20, and also then support all of our sponsors. We have some really, really nice, well thought out, well researched products. Some of the best colloidal silver ever. Well, I won't go through them all, but you know who they are. The colostrum and olive leaf extract. That's coming. Olive leaf extract is coming soon. The best in the world, we think. The BioRay Natural Detox, Daniel Vitalis's, the Reba products, the Rebounder. Lots of them there. So we get commissions when you buy through our website. So always click through the website and then the donations, and that's what makes it all work. On OneRadioNetwork.com. Thanks for your support.
Know the source.
The source.
OneRadioNetwork.com. Talk to Patrick now. 888-663-6386. Or email Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Bill Thornton is a systems analyst, and he thought about 25, 30 years ago he'd start studying the law, the courts from the top down, as a systems analyst would do. Knows a lot about the Constitution, about freedom, liberty issues, what's a citizen, what is not, and court of record. And he said that's where it's all happening. So I'm getting the drift after spending an hour with you, Bill Thornton, is that this freedom, liberty thing is real, but it is not for the faint or lazy, because the way it was all set up, without the proper courts and all that, we're not going to be free people.
You're not free if you're a citizen. You're subject to the jurisdiction. It's very simple.
Very simple. So this whole thing with the taxes or whatever, or shots, or telling you what you can eat as far as nutritional products, we're just subject to their whims as long as we play along and act like we're a United States citizen.
Right. You cannot be a pacifist. You have to actively enforce it. And by the way, the situation has deteriorated to the point where you may just spend some time in jail.
Because?
You know? Because you're asserting your rights. And because you have real people in government who think they're in charge. And there's an old saying that when the government fears the people, you have liberty. But when the people fear the government, you have slavery.
And I guess it would be, is it fair to say that it's even more dangerous because they think they're in charge because they really don't know any better?
Well, when George Bush II became president, he screamed out, he says, "I have a mandate from the people." Well, see, that's a democracy in operation, but this is a republic, not a democracy. So there are so many ignorant people that think that they are citizens that, yes, indeed, it's operating as a democracy, even though it's a republic.
And what's the difference between a republic and a democracy?
Well, I can explain that. First of all, let me say this, that on the website, 1215.org, the first place you click is on Law Notes. And that page there has a set of instructions, and don't skip over that. Follow the instructions, because that gives you the knowledge. If you try to shortcut this thing and go to the next page without following these instructions, without getting the knowledge, then what will happen is you'll read stuff and you'll have no clue what it means. There's some subtle things there.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get the knowledge before you can progress any further past the second page.
Okay.
Obviously, you can be curious and go ahead and pass it. There's no restrictions on the website. The information's all free. But still, if you really want to understand it, do the job right and just take the stuff in order according to the instructions. Now, the difference between a republic and a democracy, that's one of the things that's on the website. And the easiest way to explain a republic is to first explain a democracy. You see, a democracy is pretty simply defined. 51 beats 49. That's all. You know, you have individual members of the democracy have a big discussion about what should be done, and then they vote. And majority rules. 51 beats 49. Well, what this means is that the 49 have no rights, and the 51 don't need rights. Okay? The 49 are subject to the 51. So what you have is a dictatorship of the majority. That's what a democracy is. And what we're saying here is that the sovereignty is in the group. The individuals don't have sovereignty. The individuals are subjects of the group. And so whatever the group says, that becomes mandatory on the individual members. Does that make sense so far?
In a democracy.
In a democracy.
Right.
Now, a republic is exactly the same as a democracy in every respect except one. There's no such thing as a democratic republic. That is just a misnomer, and that just adds to the confusion. You never hear about a republic because when you have a democracy, you can manipulate the majority. You know, then you have demagogues who get up there and promise the world, and the uneducated who vote in a democracy will go for the benefits, and of course that destroys the country, and ultimately all democracies will fail for that reason, that the people end up voting the treasury to themselves. Well, now, like I said, a republic is exactly like a democracy in every aspect except one. And that one thing is that in a republic, the individual members of the republic are sovereign. Now, remember, sovereignty means that you are not accountable to higher authority. So if each member of a republic is sovereign, then that tells me that the group has no authority over the individual. So the individual members of a republic will argue among themselves, and then they will vote on an issue. And whatever comes out of the group, because it's not strictly enforceable, because the individual members are not accountable to the group, whatever they vote on becomes advisory. So in a republic, what the group says becomes advice to the individual members. But the individual member might say, you know, that doesn't really apply here. So so you may be, you're exempt from mandated instructions. There are no mandates from the group in a republic. And this leads to freedom, because when the rules become unreasonable, you know, like in a republic, let's say we all agree to drive down the right side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense, you know, so you will get a lot of voluntary compliance on that. But if something becomes unreasonable, let's say that we pass a law that says that when you come to a stop sign, you have to stay there for 15 seconds. You can't move.
Mm-hmm.
No matter if there's no traffic. You come to stop, and then you have to count off 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
That's very unreasonable. In a democracy, that's what you would have to do. In a republic, you can say, hey, screw that. That doesn't make any sense. I'm going.
Doesn't apply to me.
Yeah, it makes sense to stop. You know, this helps to the smooth flow of traffic, but why should I wait 15 seconds when there's no traffic at all? You know?
And is it true that all democracies eventually just fail?
They have to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because the demagogues step in a democracy. See, a demagogue can step in a republic also, but in a republic, the individual can say, you know, that law is not reasonable. I'm not going to go along with that one. Okay? Now, at first blush, that sounds like, well, hey, well, then you don't have any law. But you see, here in the United States, we have a limited republic. And the limitation is this, that if you don't go along with the group, then somebody can say, hey, you're not going along with the group. Okay? And so they can bring you into the court, and if they can convince 12 fellow members of the republic to convict you, then you're going to suffer the penalty. But if you get just one person on your side, then that law is not enforceable. Okay? So that's our compromise. We said, well, we don't want to be lawless. We have to have some law. But what happens if one out of 12 people are on your side? Well, maybe that law isn't so reasonable after all, especially when you have that one out of 12 sitting on a jury. So the founding fathers understood that we cannot have absolutes. We have to have some way of drawing a line between lawlessness and too much law. And so the way they did is, well, let's have a republic, But let's put the limit with a jury. We'll have a jury. If 12 members of the jury are convinced that you're a bad guy, then yes, you will go to jail. Okay? And that's what it is. It's that simple.
With Bill Thornton. Here's an email. Wow, Patrick, I'm so thankful for you being a vessel to this beautiful angel, Mr. Thornton. I love you both. The only problem is that the language of the law is not simple, and even if one wants to try to educate oneself, it's very difficult to decipher it, the language of the law.
Well, yes, and I cover that in on that same page. On the left side, there's a whole article, a link to an article called Language and Dictionaries. And the question that's posed is, which English language do you speak? You see, in America, we all speak three different languages, and each one of them is called English. Now, one version of the English language is called slang, and that's a language which is very dynamic. It changes from day to day, from block to block, from individual to other individual. So slang is a very loose language, and slang can have some interesting things in it. Like, for example, let's say you see a woman walk into the room and she's really looking hot, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's just she's dressed to kill. And you see her as a fellow, and you look at her and you say, wow, she's really cool. Well, now, does cool mean the same thing as hot? Well, yes, it does with slang, okay? So that language is a language that's almost a private version, and you have to be tuned into the meaning of the day with that language. The second English language is called formal English or business English, okay? And whenever you're talking with strangers and you want to communicate reasonably well, you speak the formal language, and this is what we try to teach you in school, although the schools are not doing a good job of it these days. But we speak formal English with each other. When you get into court, that language is also English, but it's the King's English. That's what it's called sometimes, or it's the language of the courtroom or the language of the law. There's a number of ways of describing it, but it's a very, very formal, super formal language. There's a set of books typically in the law libraries called Words and Phrases. And I think the word two, spelled T-O, the word two occupies, I think, like maybe two or three pages of court cases where they had battles over what was the meaning of the word two is. But the court English is a very, very stable language. And yes, you do have to take time to study. This is not an easy trip as far as that goes. You know, look, you went to school for at least 12 years to get a high school diploma. Why does it take 12 years of study to learn English, history, mathematics, and so forth? Well, because there's a lot to learn. And yes, there's a lot to learn in law, too. However, if you learn the common law, then it's not so tough. The common law is actually considerably simpler. Now, in law, they have what are called maxims, and maxims are general statements of law that guide us in how we make decisions in the law. And one of the maxims I like is they say that the law does not protect he who slumbers on his rights. So if you're going to be ignorant, that's the equivalent of slumbering. You can't sleep on your rights. You've got to educate yourself, and yes, you do have to invest some time. And so you have to figure, this website is designed to kind of give you a jump start on this. And so if you can get introduced to the various meanings of different words, and this is helpful, but it's not complete, okay? You do have to read books, and you have to look up definitions and look up legal definitions as well as regular definitions. One helpful source is Webster's Unabridged Dictionary. If you look at the Unabridged Dictionary, you look up a word, and you'll typically see a couple of definitions for every word. The first definition that you'll see is more of the formal English. And then the second definition below that is the legal definition. Now, they don't call it that, but that's how they arrange the dictionary.
Hmm.
Can be a help in understanding the English language.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You really want to know, look up some of these court cases where the words, the meaning of the word was fought out.
Well, they were fighting over a particular word.
That's correct.
On this tax day 2010, if one is a United States citizen, then are they liable for these things we call income taxes?
Well, you're subject. You got to follow the rules that are for you. Mm.
So, and if you're sovereign, would you say that one is not subject to income taxes?
That's the theory.
That's the theory. Do you think it's a fight this, worth fighting?
Look, in actual practice, Irwin Schiff went to jail, you know.
Yeah, but he didn't do it right, probably. Otherwise, he wouldn't be in there, huh?
It didn't matter if he was right or not. He
challenged. Oh, that's right. It didn't matter, really, did it?
It became a contest of wills.
Mm-hmm.
He was public. He was out there rebelling against the system instead of. You can't rebel. Are you there?
I am.
Okay.
Sorry, a little something just fired off.
You cannot rebel against the system.
So what's the dynamics when you start rebelling against the system? What's going on?
Well, you know, let me say it a different way. When you're asserting your rights, you cannot be obnoxious. All right?
Yeah.
If you're going to be obnoxious, you're inviting battle. You know, that generates the I'll show you attitude.
Sure.
When I'm an official and he invites me to battle, I don't accept the invitation. I just say, stay real cool, real nice. I treat him respectfully. But yes, I do have my point of view. And yes, I will take him to court if I have to, but I try to reason with him, and you know, some public officials do have a bad attitude and will invite you into one of those fights, and you just have to hold your tongue and try to be diplomatic, and that often doesn't work. So that's my first advice: is to not be on a battleground. Don't assume that government is bad. Yes, individual members of government can be bad. You know, there are people who have bad attitudes, and no matter what you do, they're going to make life hard for you. And those are the people that I take to court. You know, I never take somebody to court because they make a mistake, but I sure will take them to court if they show me that, oh, they think they're the king of the road or the king of whatever. And want to take away my rights. I say, okay, well, now that's a different story, you know. And I'll still be nice to them. And since they won't talk to me outside of court, they'll talk to me inside of court. And we'll do it on paper. Our talking is on paper.
Where was Bill Thornton? My name is Patrick Timpone, 888-663-6386, and email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So do you think that we are going to be faced with more and more control by this thing called the United States of America, this corporation, on all the United States citizens, for those who are citizens, that they're going to get more stuff piled on them?
Look, if you're going to be like the Prime Minister Adenauer, who believed in passivity and all that sort of stuff, then you're not going to have any rights. Okay, the people right now have been dumbed down enough in their education. Like I said, by the standards of 70 years ago, the people today are like fifth graders. We have a nation of fifth graders, okay? So you can't expect a country to be run well when you have a whole body of people who are not interested in government, not interested in their rights, don't see any importance. You know, just to show you how bad the attitude is, I remember just recently there was a town that decided that they were going to round up all of the truant students and force them back into school. And some enterprising reporter decided to interview these kids that were truant. And one of the kids said, you know, he says, why should we go to school? He says, all they want to do is put knowledge in our heads. Okay. So that's how badly this system has deteriorated. And I actually have heard that comment twice. There was another occasion very similar to that one and got the exact same quote. So the we do not have an educational system that creates a respect for knowledge. It's quite the opposite. Oh, you're a wise guy. You think you know it all. You know, that's the attitude that comes back at you if you start expressing your knowledge. So with that disrespect for knowledge, that works perfectly for people who wish to be dictators. So I think that the whole thing hinges on people knowing their rights. And at any given moment, the country, the nature of the country is the net difference between those who care and those who don't care. Right now we have a lot of people who don't care, and that makes it more difficult for those of us who do care, because those of us who do care will end up in court more often. Okay? Because of that.
Are the cares growing?
Well, they're growing, but I don't know if they're growing faster than the population is growing.
Mm-hmm. The percentage maybe is not growing.
Yeah, some word is getting out, and that's because of the Internet, I think. That has a lot to do with it, but the powers that be understand that. They're not stupid, and so they're trying to figure out now a way to get this Internet under control. And just recently, the Supreme Court has said that the Federal Communications Commission has no authority to regulate the Internet.
Yeah.
Up until last week, it could be regulated. And the FCC had dictated that the Internet must be free and open. You know, you pay your basic subscription to log on, but then you can communicate everywhere. And what the companies want to do that provide Internet services, they want to say, well, okay, your Internet service provider, if you want people to see your website, you have to pay an extra fee depending on the distance they are from your website. Okay, they're going to slice and dice and to justify every little tiny expense and so forth. Whereas the FCC says, "Hey, no, it's once you log into the system, you can communicate anywhere." So they're trying to get this under control and to restrict the communication. So I would expect at one point that anybody, if this goes to its ultimate conclusion, my website will be visible to anybody who's within, let's say, 500 miles.
Really.
I mean, that's where they're headed with it, unless, of course, they pay the extra fees to go farther, unless I pay the extra fees for people to look at my website.
Well, that could get real ugly.
Well, that's the whole idea. It's supposed to be ugly. Hmm. You know, they want the powers that be who really don't care about law. They care more about what they want. You know, they're going to try and control it.
So that gives a stronger argument for what you do on 1215.org for... that we can't depend on anybody else except to learn this stuff ourselves and protect ourselves and our family the best way we know how.
You see, each one of us is sovereign. That means we're the equivalent of a king, but we're kings without subjects. And so if you're going to be a king or a queen, you have to take responsibility. You can surround yourself with counselors, you know, with advisors, but you have to be educated and you have to be able to take the responsibility of making your own decisions.
Mm-hmm. And living by whatever the results are, either way.
Look, freedom's not free. And the price you have to pay is not money. That's not the price. The price you have to pay is the time to study. You got to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to get that in school. See, this was common knowledge. The stuff that's on my website was common knowledge. But when they took over the school system back around the 1850s, they little by little, they pulled that out of the curriculum, and so now nobody knows this stuff.
Yeah, and the challenge, I think that most people don't even realize they're not free, so they just move along and, you know, watch Dancing with the Stars, and that's it, you know.
Well, the general public, their eyes glaze over when I start talking about this to them. They say, problem? What problem? We're doing fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I got my job. I got, you know, I got my beer.
Got my beer?
Got my beer.
That's right. Well, William, thanks a lot. I so enjoyed spending some time with you this morning, and I think we were able to paint a pretty nice beginning overview of this whole idea of citizenship and rights and being sovereign and how this all got to be where it is. And your website really is fun. There's a lot of stuff there. It's 1215.org. And then you go into Law Notes and where do you go from there after you go to Law Notes?
Let me slip in one thing here.
Sure, go ahead.
Click on, at the bottom of that second page, it says continue to the next page.
Yeah.
You click on there, you will find that on the left side, it says jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you click on that, the Internal Revenue Code. And on that page, you click on the Internal Revenue Code, and you will find the law that says that the tax law is not law.
Oh, that's the one you mentioned, Title 26 U.S.C. 7806?
Right.
And it says the tax law is not law.
Right. It's in legal language, so you have to stop and think when you read it. But that's what it means.
That'd be something fun to do today on April 15th.
That's the subject of the day, so, you know, I thought I'd draw your attention to that. Yeah. And this is the opinion of the Congress. This is not my opinion. It's the opinion of the Congress, of the court, and would you believe, also the Internal Revenue Service. Because the Internal Revenue says that the Internal Revenue Service actually, in a case which is cited on here, Nordby Supply Company versus the United States, they actually said, you know, the Internal Revenue Code is not law, and therefore the Internal Revenue Code cannot be applied to the Internal Revenue Service.
All right, William, we're out of time. Thanks so much for spending some time with us on this April 15th. We sure appreciate it. Perhaps we can do it again sometime if you like.
I'd be happy to.
Enjoy. Thank you. William Thornton, my name is Patrick Timpone. Once again, his website, 1215-1215.org. You can have a party there. Find that code, USC 26, or 26 USC 7806. Copy and paste that and send that to a few friends today on April 15th, Tax Day. That'd be fun. Why not? All right, kids. Open Phone Friday tomorrow. We're going to have fun. We always do Open Phone Friday. Next week, have a great lineup of guests for you, including Cliff High, Half Past Human Guy, and his rickety time machine. We're going to look at a lot of predictions from Cliff High. That's coming up next week. Also, Dr. Harvey Beagleson. I love you all very much. It's an honor for me to be here with you each day on OneRadioNetwork.com. I'll see you tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Patrick Timpone, take care.
Know the source on One Radio Network.